What we were trying to understand last time is of the utmost importance. And it is extremely difficult to begin to fathom it. You remember, we started with a statement about the positive male creative energy of the universe. And I made a gesture like this to suggest that it pulsates. It is timeless, it is spaceless, it is inconceivable, it is indescribable. It is not force, power, energy, God, concept, anything at all that we know of. Nevertheless, through the ages, we have said it is. And we call that the positive male. But the words positive and male are not to be understood as positive and male in our dictionary sense. If we were to imagine this inconceivable creative power as positive and male in our sense, then we are speaking lies and nothing but lies. Our word positive, our word male, has no meaning whatsoever in the context of the transcendent. So, we use these words purely for convenience, to help the mind to somehow escape from, wriggle out of its natural conditioning, its normal tied-up state, and get a feel of this transcendent reality. Now the same applies to the use of the term, on the other hand, of negative female. You remember, I said this positive male creative pulsation is utterly unconcerned with everything and anything that we are concerned with. It is the negative female aspect of the creative power of the universe, which is the conserving power. It is the nurturer, the sustainer, in theistic religions, the second person of the Trinity, that which sustains, nourishes, endures, sacrifices itself for the sake of bringing to fruition, and so forth. Now, it is sometimes helpful to regard this negative female aspect as a river flowing. The other is a pulsation. This is like a river flowing. And these words are just to give a feel of difference between aspects of the same thing. In fact, the same thing has no aspects. It is we who make the aspects for our convenience and to help ourselves to understand. Get it? Now, when the conserving aspect oversteps the mark, the male creative pulsating aspect just destroys it. This is our trouble. Having conserved, nurtured, sustained, brought to fruition, then the feminine aspect of ourselves, of every one of us, whether we are male or female, wants to stay put with that which has already come to fruition. This is the mistake. We grasp at it, we hold on to it, we want it to just stick there, fossilize, in other words. But that is not the nature of transcendence. That positive creative aspect just disrupts what man tries to fossilize. He breaks it up. That's that. You see? Now, this basic conflict is in us, in each and every one of us. That one, the male side of us, whether we be man or woman, makes no difference. In every one of us, the male side, the positive male side, will disrupt quite easily. The female side will want to conserve and keep and preserve. In harmony, the male and the female balance each other. The male and the female aspects in us. When the male unbalances without cause for unbalance, he acts like Mars, the god of war. Just spreads destruction. You take a young boy growing up, and if he's very strong and healthy, he can't stop himself from smashing this and smashing the other, because he feels his power thereby. This is the male overbalancing the female in him. You see? It's like that. And the female overbalancing always works, therefore, for putrefaction, for fossilization. Our task then is to try and get the balance. When we get the balance, we are in right relationship within ourselves. And if we are in right relationship within ourselves, the male and female aspects of us are in harmony, then there is that natural power in us to have right relationships with other people around us. It is not easy to see this, leave alone to do it. It is very difficult to see it. Because the seeing is not an intellectual process for so many minutes or hours or weeks, and lo and behold, I have seen, now I know. It's not that. The seeing and the knowing is a continuous thing from moment to moment, because every single situation in every single moment requires the new seeing and the new knowing. Life is like that. Otherwise it's death, isn't it? Death in the sense of the broken up, the destroyed, or the fossilized. This is the problem. So that the mind, the intellect particularly, the intellectual aspect of us, has to become extremely resilient, always alive, capable of responding, seeing and responding, being sensitive to and responding to the new situation as it arises. And as it arises, we have to preserve the balance of the male-female in us. Now you see what this implies. If the situation demands it, the male aspect in us must function rather more. If the situation demands differently, the female aspect in us must function rather more. And in this way, the male and female in ourselves maintains a balance. You will appreciate the difficulty. Life is not child's play. For us adults to live as humans is not child's play. Now, let us recall something else. I think we did talk about this some time back. Man is transcendence thinking. Did I mention that before?
Yes.
Man is transcendence thinking. Now you see the difficulty. Immediately the mind tries to make a picture of transcendence. We cannot pictorialize transcendence. Transcendence is transcendence. It is only convenient to say the words and leave it at the saying. Thinking in the sense of creating. What power has transcendence? Obviously not electrical, magnetic, gravitational, or any such power. Because that would not be transcendent. That is within our grasp. We can deal with those things. But this thing, of which hints have come through the ages as thought power. Well, what you and I call thought has no power at all in that sense. The universe has been called the expression of the thought in the mind of God. These are the words we can use. We haven't other words to try to suggest. Something which can be realized by the Holy One. That is why such words have been used, because there is a realization which underlies it all. Man is transcendence thinking. The actual creative process, the creative activity is thought. That's the meaning of the word thought in that context. In Genesis, God said, let there be, and there was. You see? That's how it's put in Genesis. But now let us look at this thing. Man is transcendence thinking. This comes... Well, I haven't come across it in that verbal form anywhere. That's my own verbal form in the English language. But in the Upanishads, where they speak about creation, they start off, there are several passages which deal with creation, but one of them starts off like this, that in the beginning there was Atma alone in the form of a person. That is the English translation. In the form of a person, Purusha Vida. The word Purusha is translated into English as person. It is a correct translation where the commoner garden use in Sanskrit of the word Purusha is concerned. But the Upanishad gives a very suggestive hint to tell us how to understand the word Purusha in this context. Now, of course, the hint is quite unphilological. We must forget our philology and all the rest of it, you see. The next sentence states, looking around and seeing no other than himself, he said, I am, etc. And then the next sentence goes on to say, because before all this, he burnt up all evils, therefore he is called Purusha. Now it's a little play, it's a little trickery with words. Purva is the Sanskrit for before. P-U-R-V-A. Purva. Burnt, the actual word in the Upanishad is aushat, past tense. Its root is ush. So the Upanishad says, pur ush. And says, because before all this, he burnt up all evils, sarvan papmanan. You see? Therefore he is called Purusha. It's just a trick with words. Nothing to do with scientific philology. Do remember that. Well, what is the significance of this? The Holy One who realized, through whom transcendence was realized, starts by saying in the beginning. But in the beginning has no reference, therefore, to time, obviously. Because transcendence is timeless, completely timeless. It is dimensionless. It has no dimensions of any sort, quantitative or qualitative. It is immeasurable in every sense. But that sort of realization can and does take place through human beings who have entered that holy state. And then to say, before the Atma, well, that's utterly meaningless. You can't have a before in time, before a beginning, can you? It's completely meaningless. So that, obviously, the Upanishad is not referring to anything like the creation of the objective universe. What the Holy One is saying there is, when he uses the term in the beginning, it means that in the ultimate state, which one can reach, the timeless, beginningless, endless state, there is only transcendence, Atma. There is only transcendence. No differentiation at all. And then he says there was transcendence in the form of a person. Purusha Vida. I like to translate it as man form. Capital M, capital A, capital N. Man form. Now if we relate this to the other tradition, the Judaic tradition, which everyone says has no relationship with the Indo-Aryan tradition, which I'm afraid I cannot accept. I think the two traditions are really too much alike to have no relationship whatever. In the Kabbalistic tradition, we have the evolution of, or rather, the development, oh, all words are foolish. The emanations, I'll use the word which the Jews themselves use, the emanations of Yahweh as the different Sephira, the 10 Sephiroth, as such, as they are called. You see? The first three are that represent the transcendent trinity. And the next six, which are in Yahweh's own being, on the divine plane, are the primordial man. Adam Kadmon. The primordial man. That makes 9 Sephira. The 10th is Malkuth kingdom. This world. Primordial man. But primordial man is the concept in the divine mind. The concept in the divine mind is the Logos, the Word. And that Adam, that man, is the perfect man. Now let us look at it in a different way. Supposing we talk like this. Three different orders of being and existence. The transcendent, mind only and manifestation, psychophysical manifestation. Now, transcendence thinking, transcendence creating, impresses the empty, luminous, transparent realm of mind only with man form, which I would also call the all form. Man form contains all forms within it. There is no form in the realm of mind only, but it is a convenient way of talking. The potentiality, the impress into that realm of mind only is such that it is a potentiality which will express itself as all the different separate forms throughout the objective universe, throughout the manifested universe. But now you see, there's a great danger in talking like this. We immediately have to say three orders of being and existence. So the brain thinks of them as three separate ones. All that is false. And yet it's so difficult to find a way of talking about it. Now, this man form is directly related to each one of us. That is the one and only man, the concept in the mind of God, the undying man that is born and dies through the innumerable human beings on the globe. See, the Rig Veda gives one hint of it only, as far as I'm aware. I think it comes somewhere in the 8th book. As Ananda Kumaraswamy put it poetically, it is the Lord who is the one and only transmigrant. And the Lord is this man form, Purusha Vida. Vida means in the form of. But in the form of Purusha, he who has burnt up all evils. Now, look at the actual word which is used in the Upanishad. There are two words for ill, for sins, evils. Papa, which simply means sin in the ordinary sense, and papman, which is also translated as sin. Papman is called evil or sin, wickedness, and so forth. Papa is also called the same thing. I like to split up the word papman, following the lead given by the Upanishads of playing tricks with words. Papa, papman, is papa and man, mind. He who has burnt up all evil-mindedness. This is much something quite different, something which is immensely more significant than burning up sins. Oh, this sin, that sin, why, you can go to your father confessor and get absolved from all that. But to burn up evil-mindedness, that means the very origin of all my sins is burnt up, isn't it? The very source of it, the festering source of it. The womb of Lilith. Lilith. Not Eve, but Lilith. Now, how do I burn up evil-mindedness? Why burn up? Why wasn't something else said? Swept clean. No, burnt up. Why? Because this is something very real to the individual's process. In the ascent, or rather, shall I say, in the unfolding of the holy state, there is the attentiveness becomes so intense that there is what we may metaphorically call psychic heat generated, the Tibetan tummo, what the Tibetans call tummo, psychic heat. But this psychic heat is the intensity of attention. It is what the Veda and the Upanishad called tapas. Tapas. Attention which absolutely glows like that, gets white hot. And in that white hotness, with the intensity of attention, the tendencies which are actually impregnated in the stuff of the brain and the cells of the body, it's like burning away all the dross and only the pure metal is left. Therefore, burning up all sarvan papa, all evils, all evil mindedness. Now, when this evil mindedness is out, what's happened? The person himself is completely empty, transparent, luminous. The mind is totally empty. It is not cluttered up. That is to say that your consciousness, your power to attend is untrammeled by any accumulation of ideas, beliefs, conceptions. It is free of all conditioning. When that happens, there is no such thing as my mind present. It is the universal mind only. And because this universal mind is the supreme condition of mind that man can realize, therefore, when talking about Atma, this Holy One said that in the beginning all this was only transcendence in the form of a man. It really is extraordinary, you know, once you really get into it, once you really penetrate into it. Then differentiation and separation and the clouding over of the mind comes into being in the objective manifested universe of which we are as organisms part and parcel. Now, what I have been saying has upside downed the reality. But reality upside down or right side up is the same reality. If you take a cup and place it like that on the table, or place it the other way, it's the same cup. Only the difference comes in here that unless one is drunk or inattentive, one doesn't try to pour the tea into a cup which is upside down. That is the only difference in actual practice. The Holy Ones of the past had no option but to present it in such a form as to give the impression to all of us who are in the stupefied, drunk, unawakened state, you see, to give us no option, they had no option but to put it in such a form that we get the impression that there is a transcendent order, a mind only, an objective universe, and from up there everything comes down. Not a bit of it. That isn't the case. The whole thing is just one. One total reality. Get rid of the idea of time where transcendence is concerned, beginning, proceeding, coming to an end, or a full stop, or whatever it is, or until you change. Not that. Who talked about these things? Who communicated them? People like you and I. Accepting that, through their longing to discover ultimate reality, they went through that process by which they became whole, complete, clean, utterly pure, clean. They had burnt up all evil-mindedness. And therefore there was the realization of that state was expressed in these terms. So we start actually here. Transcendence is not something, some person, some consciousness, some whatever word you may like to use, which one day said, oh, let me impress mind only, as if mind only was some wonderful place, or medium or agent or something, and created a man form which in its turn made Jim, Jack and Jerry, you see, nothing of the sort. It is you or I. In this state of complete holiness, when the mind has realized that silence, that stillness, which includes all sound, see, it is then that this extraordinary awareness is present. And then we talk about it and spin out the whole verbal structure. Now, you might say, then, good gracious me, what's the point in having done it at all? Well, there is a point. If we are concerned with religion, with the heart of religion, we are concerned with the emergence of transcendence here and now. We are concerned with the flowering out of those hidden aspects of mind, which are the realm of purity and beauty and truth and love and goodness in us. Now, unless, this is what I say, unless there is some sense of transcendence, our efforts get misapplied, misdirected. What is one of the obvious manifestations of this? The man seeking God, truth, liberation, nirvana, is a grabber just as much as the man seeking money or property, wine, women, songs, anything you like to grab. If the man of religion was not a grabber, he would never try to organize religion. He would never set up the religious life as a desirable objective, as a value by which the individual will gain something. See, here are the evidences which we must see very, very clearly. Now, when the intellect is at work, we can see all this well enough in the other fellow, the professional priest and prelate and evangelist and whatnot and whatnot. But for me to be awake all day and every day to this aspect of my hidden mental activity, this is the real thing. I must be awake to it in myself. If I merely criticize other people, however true the criticism may be, then there is no real holiness in me. No true concern, no pure concern for transcendence. It is impure. It is self-oriented. When I merely criticize the other person, I mean, this is ordinary psychology, I'm just puffing up my own ego. I'm saying, what a fine fellow I am. Look how bad he is. But you see, this is the cancer in the mind which has plagued us through the ages, isn't it? This sort of thing. So it is of the utmost importance to have some sense of transcendence which continuously purifies us and makes our life energy go in the right direction. Now, remember, a sense of transcendence. This is, and I mean, when I'm using the word sense here in this context, I mean sense quite free of all sense forms, namely sight forms, sound forms, touch forms, taste forms, etc. If you really examine if you really can look deep into your own mind, you will find that all the time we are making particular forms in relation to transcendence. The ordinary theistic believer will make these forms in relation to God. We deal with God just as we in our youthful romantic state deal with the ones we like. We make all sorts of pictures. Oh, I'd like my Prince Charming or Princess Charming to be thus and thus and thus and thus. Anything but what he or she really will be. And when the ragbag actually does turn up, there's a little bit of trouble and disappointment. Then we gloss over it and just don't look at it. Fall into the trap and afterwards, I wasn't thinking, was I? Not a case of wasn't thinking, wasn't looking. Wasn't seeing straight. Now we do precisely that with God or truth or transcendence or anything at all. We make all kinds of pictures which are conditioned by our particular sense forms of sight, sound, taste, touch, etc. Depending upon which sense and which senses in us are more powerful than the others. When I was a very little fellow, my God was certainly capable of far more wonderful symphonies than Beethoven's Ninth. Beethoven to me was God in my teens. You see, and of course God himself must be a super Beethoven. See, you can't get away from this kind of thing, this peculiar conditioning, this limiting, this creating or rather raising up God or transcendence or truth or the ultimate in my image. Whereas the whole point of the religious life and of spiritual freedom is to get free of all this. That is why it's necessary to have a sense of transcendence. What word can I use but sense? To have a feel of transcendence, to have a touch of transcendence. But you see, all these words are related to the senses, aren't they? All our words, they are bound to be related to our sense experience. Now, what we call our own mind is a sort of a ragbag heap of all sense impressions, all sorts of thought forms, as we may call them. They are beliefs, ideas, conceptions, knowledge of principles, of methods, and this, that, and the other, and so forth. This is what we call our mind. But this is not the unified mind. This is the conditioned mind. One of the most important consequences of the inward discipline is that all these sense impressions and sense consciousnesses become quiet. There is a state of rest, of stillness. In that state of stillness, this mind on its own plane, the unified mind, man, capital M-A-N, at last is able to spring into action through the particular living person who has become still. Look at that wonderful statement in the Psalms, "Be still and know that I am God." God the indefinable. But when one is still, one knows Atma in the form of the person. The word person is a sacred word in that sense. The word person stands for the Holy One who has burnt up all evil-mindedness. Or let me put it in another form, in whom all evil-mindedness has been burnt up. Then, you see, here on earth, the psychophysical organism is the instrument for the Lord. The doctrine of incarnations. The Lord incarnates in so and so and so and so. Then that man form, the perfect man. Has got out of the unredeemed state, the sinful Adam state, and become the second Adam, the redeemed one, the perfect man. And the perfect man is not a man. Now, because, of course, this is a logical form in which to present it, but don't think for a moment that it is a because in the ordinary sense of the term. Because transcendence thinking is man, the perfect man. And because the man on earth here, having burnt up all evils, all evil-mindedness, is in complete harmony with man, the perfect man, which is all mind. You see? Therefore, one sees that the transcendent mind only and we here are directly linked. You see, there are some theistic religions which have always maintained that God and man are utterly separate. This is utterly false. There is only one total reality. If this sense of transcendence really lights up in us, it enables us quite easily to be totally attentive all the time. This is the point. It's a storehouse of power which can never be misused. If there is a real sense of transcendence, that sense of transcendence grows in us when we do see all the flaws, our conceit, our egoism, our vanity, our graspingness, our resentment, ill will, hatred, and above all, stupidity and ignorance. When we are really awake to all that, then we behave well. And that's that. And then we can really attend, truly attend. True attention is possible only in the state of unself-consciousness. Let there be self-consciousness and there is no true attention. The separation is out. The unity of the universe is restored in here, where that unity was sundered, broken up, and therefore the sinful state prevails. Now please, don't try to make this or regard this as a philosophy. That would be just another bondage. Worse, it is a force for damnation. All the philosophies of religion as such are forces for damnation. It is one of the great misfortunes of the world that they have become open to the world. They've been written, printed, and they are open to the world. The stupid man, the ignorant man, the grasping man, the man consumed with lust and desire and so forth, will always misuse anything and everything. The poor devil has no option but to do so. And to misuse God is to misuse the supreme power that there is. Just look at history. Look at the terrible things that have been done in the name of the highest. I don't know anything done in the world which is so terrible as all the things that have been done in the name of God. The evil things done. There have been good things also, but those are not problems. We get concerned in the ordinary sense of the word concerned, because we are troubled. But has anything caused such pain, misery, horror, ugliness in human life as the things which have been done in the name of God and religion and truth and all the rest of it? But let this sense of transcendence grow. Don't seek it. Don't seek it. There'll be inevitable failure. You know why? Because I, the imperfect person, don't know anything about how to seek the perfect. That's that. I don't know it. Let it come. There is grace operating throughout the universe. Let it operate. Don't hinder it. It will come. Just use the senses rightly. Human beings are so devilishly self-indulgent. Just use the senses rightly. See the beauty of nature, of all that there is. Be sensitive to it. Respond to it. Which means don't grab at it. Let it be. Let it pass on. This mysterious power in the universe moves all things all the time, pours out endless beauty. Nature is prodigal, isn't she? Endless beauty. Hear, touch, taste, without grasping, without wanting the repetition of the thing. It will always come. Again and again, in different forms. But woe unto the person who wants it in the same form. He is a fossilizer. And the male positive creative power just breaks him up, smashes him up, won't have it. That's the terrible aspect of the Lord God, which is a fact. Let's have no namby-pamby nonsense about God being all so very nice and gentle and kind and so forth. As and when he smacks me, that's the complete end of me. So realize that. So you see, as the senses are used rightly, the links, the lines of the avenues of communication between this organism and the totality are always open. The avenues are clean. There are no flaws in them. And so all the time, transcendence flows freely through each and every single organism. And you see, when the attention, when the organism is completely attentive to that, then this transcendence in man form and the glory and the beauty and the perfection of man is realized in that person. What happens to the person, that person on earth, that man, that woman on earth? there is extraordinary happiness, extraordinary peace, extraordinary action. I use the word extraordinary, but actually that is the normal happiness, peace, action, which distinguishes the human. The kingdom of heaven, nirvana, liberation, are not to be sought, to be achieved, to be attained, to be won. Every single thing that is done in that way is a self-destructive thing. It destroys its own self. Let it be. This has been called the temple of the Lord. Keep it clean, and the Lord will be visible in every nook and cranny of it. Otherwise, that transcendent is lost in a cloud of dust which blinds one's eyes. But let that transcendent emerge. All our calculations from day to day, oh, I'll do this, then, oh, we'll get that, and that'll be nice. This is how we spend our days. Oh, let me ring up Tom or Jenny or whatever it is. We'll have a nice evening together. It's not the fact of having rung up Tom or Jenny and spending an evening together, but this calculatingness in us, this grabbing. Because the consciousness which grabs brings to birth, and therefore there must be death. The death which is destruction, which is attended with sorrow, loss, pain, misery, and all the rest of it. As the Buddha called it, domanassa, which is this Pali for duh, meaning bad, man, the mind. The mind made bad, hurt, diseased. There are the real roots of sorrow, difficulty, pain, and the mess of the world. So, let this sense of transcendence emerge. Now bear in mind, this, on the one hand, this creative power. On the other, that same power which has a nurturing aspect, a sustaining aspect, in order to bring to fruition. But I, the ordinary man, must be so attentive, so wise, that I never hold on and try to make stay put once the fruition has arrived. Let it go. Let the life process just go on and on and on and on. Don't interfere with it.